The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on May 18, 1987 in Almvik, Sweden. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 26, Text 40.
Dyotanam Pachanam Panam Padanam Hima Mardhanam Tejaso Vritayas Tu Etaha Sosha Shoshanam Shut Trit Eva Cha Dyotanam Pachanam Panam Adanam Hima Mardhanam Tejaso Vritayastveta Soshanam Kshutridevacha Dyotanam Pachanam Panam. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Fire is appreciated by its light and by its ability to cook, to digest, to destroy cold, to evaporate, and to give rise to hunger, thirst, eating, and drinking. You do repetition? Report by Srila Prabhupada. The first symptoms of fire are distribution of light and heat, and the existence of fire is also perceived in the stomach. Without fire, we cannot digest what we eat. Without digestion, there is no hunger and thirst, or power to eat and drink. When there is insufficient hunger and thirst, it is understood that there is a shortage of fire within the stomach. An Ayurvedic treatment is performed in connection with the fire element, Agni Mandyam. Since fire is increased by the secretion of bile, the treatment is to increase bile secretion. The Ayurvedic treatment thus corroborates the statements in Srimad Bhagavatam. The characteristic of fire in subduing the influence of cold is known to everyone. Severe cold can always be counteracted by fire. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26, entitled Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, Text 40. So, this just reminds me that in Vrindavan, one time they prepared for Srila Prabhupada a preparation called Bhatti Chachari, which is a preparation where the vegetable is slightly burnt, not to a black crisp, but to a brown flavor. And that is containing much ghee, heavy ghee. But because Prabhupada was sick, he had wanted that preparation, but because he was sick, they didn't put any chili in the Bhatta Chachari. When he tasted it, he asked him, why there's no chili? He says, Prabhupada, because you're sick. Yes, but if you eat this much ghee, then you'll kill me. because you need the sufficient fire to be able to digest it. So as much ghee as there should be also that much chili to add the sufficient fire to digest the ghee. So he was very angry because he said that in order to digest ghee or rich food, you need more chili, you need more heat. So that's why we take chili. Chili, in other words, chili is not taken just for the sake of taste. But it's necessary for vegetarians to take chili sometimes when there's a lot of ghee to add a little extra fire to the digestion. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that I'm the fire of digestion. So in the teachings here of Kapila Muni, his mother Devahuti, he's given the analytical study of material nature. And in this analytical study, some of the things may seem very profound, and some may seem very obvious. But in an analysis, you have to give definitions so that it's very clear what is being discussed. So here in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, when it discusses or fire, or air, or other various aspects of sensual perception, coming from ether to air, to fire, to water, down to earth, everything is explained and defined in a very practical and realized sense. The nature of fire is described in different aspects. Some aspects we may think about, other aspects we may not have considered. Naturally, we know fire by its heat and its light. Possibly we didn't think about fire in terms of being present in the stomach in the form of fire of digestion. But Kapila Muni, giving the Sankhya, he doesn't take anything for granted. Sankhya means to give a very analytical study of different aspects of material and spiritual science, and thus to make it very clear in the mind exactly what everything is. Ultimately, then, one comes to the conclusion of what is the absolute truth. What is the material world? Who are we? What is our relationship with the absolute truth? How do we act in that relationship? How do we achieve the final perfection? Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained this, Chaitanya Charitamrita explains this in the terms of sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Basically, to understand the sambandha, we have to know what are the various forms and ingredients that are around us. And then we can understand. This is the material world. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmana sarvasa. That everything is being done by this material nature through the interaction of the three modes. How that is being performed, it's mentioned here in the Bhagavad. Modern scientists, they spend a lot of time trying to analyze what is the nature of fire, what is the nature of sound, vibration, form, various material elements. They spend their whole life in investigating. But the Vedic scientists, they can simply take the instructions of Kapila Dev, who has already done an analytical study of the material world, and they don't have to waste so much time in studying again various details of the material nature. We can go directly to the para-prakriti, or the higher energy, the spiritual nature. The example is given also in describing what is the nature of material or spiritual nature compared with Krishna, or what is our nature in comparison to Krishna. These have many times the example of fire is given. that just as fire contains heat and light, so similarly, you can say that, that is the Dharma of fire. What is the meaning of fire if it has no heat and no light? In this way, Prabhupada said the Dharma of a chili is to be hot. If you bit into a chili and it was sweet, then what would be the use of that? The Dharma of salt is to be salty. If you put salt on your vegetable and it tastes sweet, then it won't satisfy its purpose. Or similarly, sugar is supposed to be sweet. So these are like the dharmas of these various objects. So then what is our eternal dharma, our eternal nature, which is inseparable from us? This was asked by Sanatana Goswami to Lord Chaitanya. Sanatana Goswami said that people call me a pandit. They say I'm very learned. I was a minister, prime minister in the government. But actually I am a fool because I don't know who I am. So please tell me, who am I? But then Lord Chaitanya said, Jivar Sarup Hoy Nitya Krishna Das. That the nature of the individual soul is to be eternally the servant of Krishna. This is our Sanatan Dharma. This is actually our nature, is to always serve Krishna. So, in all the various paths of self-realization, that path which is considered most perfect or most complete is the one which is based upon service to Krishna. Naturally, because that's our eternal dharma, that's our eternal constitution. Counteracting the material nature and becoming one with the absolute, merging into the effulgence, the Mayavadi liberation or Sahujya Mukti, that is considered to be the lowest form of liberation. And that is despised, it's hated, or it's just feared even by devotees. They don't want that form of liberation at all. In fact, some great acharya has sung that such form of Mayavi liberation he considers worse than hell. Kaivalya Narakaya cha. So, this is the mood. Next higher stage of self-realization, Paramatma realization, where one can become a devotee after realizing the Paramatma. Within the Paramatma realization, there is some appreciation of the form of God as a super soul in the heart. So it's a little closer to actual devotional service, although it is not devotional service yet. Acting in one's constitutional position as a servitor of the Lord, that means that one is already in a liberated platform because one is acting according to one's nitya dharma or eternal constitution. Iha yasya hare dasye karmana manasagira nikala swastivasa su jivan mukta suchate. Iha yasya hare dasye. When someone is acting in the consciousness that I am the servant of Hari, karmana manasa gira, with his activities, with his thoughts, and with his words. Jivan mukta suchi. At that time, he's already transcended the material situation. And even while living in the material world, in the material body, that person is to be considered as liberated. That means the various aspects of material suffering or enjoyment don't touch such a devotee whose fixed thought, word, and deed in serving the Lord. So Lord Chaitanya, he was teaching pure devotional service as he taught to Rupa Goswami. Anya bilashita sunyam gyana karma anabritam. Anukulena Krishna Nusilanam Bhakti Uttama. Tama means ignorant. Ut means above. Uttama means that which is above all ignorance. So, Uttam Bhakti or transcendental devotional service without any material tinge, that is one in pure service without any condition. The Lord Chaitanya was teaching this to his followers, how to be situated in pure devotion without any material desire for sense gratification or without any desire for liberation or unrelated knowledge. To be favorably always engaged in Krishna's service. So when Lord Chaitanya was training his followers in Srivas Angan, and he was chanting Hare Krishna with them, he was in this way firing them to be fixed in that selfless devotional service. But one time, there was, might have heard about this before, that there was one brahmachari who was practicing Astanga Yoga, and he went to Srivas Thakur and he asked him for permission to watch the Sankirtan from his house. So Srivas thought, this is a very austere brahmachari. He's eating leaves and bark in the tree in the forest. He's wearing bark and skins for clothing. It's very austere. So there's probably no harm if he watches the kirtan. He's not a gross materialist or someone who's a renounced person. So then he let him stay in his house and look through the window at the kirtan. When Lord Chaitanya came in the evening with all the devotees and they started to chant, the kirtan was going on. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Different kirtan. But suddenly Lord Chaitanya stopped the kirtan. What is this? Why am I not feeling any ecstasy? Who is the cause of this? Why am I not feeling any ecstasy tonight? Every night we're coming, we're chanting, I'm feeling ecstasy in the holy name. Why tonight I'm not feeling any ecstasy? Who is responsible for this? So all the devotees, they hung their head down, they're thinking, what did I do wrong today? Which offense have I committed? What aparad have I performed? Why am I messing? Why am I obstructing Lord Chaitanya from having his ecstasy? Naturally, the devotees, when there's some accusation, they immediately look to themselves for the fault. So the nature of a devotee is to always introspect and look, what are the defects in myself? How can I purify myself? How can I become closer to Krishna? Materialistic nature, if somebody says, who is at fault? He said, it must be you. Must be the other one. Must be everyone but me. I can never be wrong. There's a material response. But the devotional response first, and naturally the devotee is humbled. He always looks first to himself. Maybe I've done something wrong. What could it be? But actually, the fault was this brahmachari was looking at Lord Chaitanya's kirtan. Lord Chaitanya, he didn't manifest any ecstasy in front of outside people. At least at that time he didn't. Later he became sometime so ecstatic that he forgot there was outside people. But consciously he didn't manifest before outside people. At that time, somehow he sensed, naturally, being the super soul, he knows everything. But anyway, he was playing like that he didn't know, but he was sensing someone was watching. So Srivas Thakur had once before had a problem like this where his mother-in-law had hid under a basket and was watching Lord Chaitanya's kirtan. And Lord Chaitanya didn't feel ecstasy then. So immediately he thought that, uh-oh, I made a mistake. I brought this brahmachari in and he must be the cause for Lord Chaitanya's not feeling ecstasy. So he said, Lord Chaitanya, well, there's just one person here in my house, some guest, a very renounced sage, Brahmachari, and he's, what, bring him here. Lord Chaitanya said, bring him out. Let us see, who is this Brahmachari? So they bring out the Brahmachari. He's wearing, you know, the bark and the, you know, long hair, knotted up, everything, you know, the kamandalu and a stick. I mean, a real classic profile. So he comes out, you know, kind of chest open, head up, comes out. Lord Chaitanya takes a look at him and says, what do you do? You know, he says, he says, you know, well, I do yoga. I eat leaves, berries in the tree, and I do tapasya. What is your goal? By tapasya, I'll achieve liberation. So then Lord Chaitanya just laid into him. You are so proud, doing your austerity, and you simply want to achieve this liberation. You are far, far, far away from devotional service. Actually, you're doing all this because simply you're trying to attract the cheap fame and reputation of the innocent public. They'll see you like this and they'll say, oh, he's a very renounced person. But you have not understood what is devotional service. You're actually doing all this in an enjoying attitude, trying to achieve liberation. These are all different forms of material desire. Bhukti, bhukti, siddhi, kami, sakali, oshanto, krishna, bhakta, niskama, taiv, shanto. You should simply be situated in pure devotional service. That is the only perfection, but you are far, far away from that. Therefore, you are not qualified. You are not qualified in your false ego and in your proud practice of austerities and penances to be present during this association of devotees and their intimate, private, ecstatic kirtan. So show him the door. Took him and he was out. So then Lord Chaitanya again started the kirtan. This time everyone was feeling very ecstatic. Chaitanya was feeling ecstatic, jumping up and down in ecstasy. So, the outside that Brahmachari, he was meditating, sitting there on the doorstep. And he was thinking what Lord Chaitanya said. And he thought, yes, everything that Lord Chaitanya said is correct. Gaurahari, Mahaprabhu has told me that I'm simply out for cheap name and fame. It's a fact. When someone sees me with my bark on, I think, this person must be thinking how austere I am, how great a tapasvi I am. Certainly my mind is very gross in this way. And I could see that in all my years of practice of tapasya and austerity, doing meditation and yoga practice, hatha yoga, various things, pranayama, I couldn't taste even a fraction of the ecstasy of the spiritual force that I saw in that short kirtan that they were performing. Actually, they have the real spiritual force that I've all along been hankering for. But I have no qualification. Simply, I am going around very proud. Everything he said was exactly true. In spite of being so fallen, unqualified, what I don't understand is how was I allowed even for a few moments to see the kirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his associates, how beautiful the way they were chanting with their arms raised in the air, and how Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Gadadhar Srivas and all the devotees, they were there. I've never seen something like that. So beautiful, so wonderful. So pure. I being so wretched a person, so how was I able even for a moment to experience that sankirtan of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? And thinking this, he was actually started to cry, feeling himself very fortunate and feeling himself very fallen. Inside the kirtan was going on, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Everyone was dancing and chanting and the whole kirtan was going. Suddenly Lord Chaitanya again stopped the kirtan. Everyone became, oh no, what happened again? It's pretty ecstatic then. So then Lord Chaitanya said, where is that brahmachari? Srivastava said, no. Mahaprabhu, he's outside. He's outside. We let him outside. Yes, now you can bring him back in. Now he's ready to join the kirtan. So then they went out. There he was sitting. They said, Lord Chaitanya is calling you. He said, no, what? He's calling me. Yes, come. And then they brought him in and cleaned him up, made him a Vaishnava. Then he was admitted in the Sankirtan of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nitai Gaurve Varani Hari Hari Vo. So, in this way, our eternal dharma, just like the fire's dharma is heat and light, it's actually to serve Krishna. The other perversions of that in the material world, will be serving the senses, or we're trying to achieve heavenly planets, to have greater sense gratification, or where we want to become one with God, or where we want to control the material energy by mystic powers. All these are various aspects of and expansions of material consciousness, of an enjoying mood. But devotional service is where we cultivate a serving mood. Seva bhav. Krishna bhavanamrita. Prabhupada translated Krishna consciousness in Sanskrit as Krishna bhavanamrita. Bhavana, the ecstasy, the thought, the attitude of serving, the nectar of the attitude of ecstatic service to Krishna. Krishna consciousness. So, in this way, fire has been used in many ways and examples of our developing Krishna consciousness. For instance, in the Vedas, it says that actually the conditioned soul is like a piece of wood. Within wood, there is fire. Because the tree is taken through the leaves and the cholesterol is taken energy from the sun, has grown up to become a large tree, somehow that energy of the sun is within the wood. That wood can sometimes be transformed into coal. Coal is transformed into petroleum, oil. In this way, all of these substances that we burn, originally that energy, you can trace it back to the sun, which is a source of fire in this universe. In its natural fire state. So, just as wood has fire within it, so the living entity in material consciousness is like wood. Within that wood, like living entity, there's a spiritual fire or potential. But to get that potential out, the wood has to be ignited by fire. When it's ignited, then it also burns and the fire comes out. So like that, the conditioned soul, is ignited by coming in contact with the Krishna conscious devotees, with the Krishna conscious spiritual master. And this causes the wood-like living entity to ignite and become spiritually ignited, to become, we could say, fired up in Krishna consciousness. So, sometimes austerity is also described as a fire, the fire of austerity, because it's a tremendous determination. And by performing austerity, actually one generates heat within the body. Just as when Hiranyakashipu was doing his austerity, his producing such a heat that all the demigods were feeling the heat. Even in the higher planets, all the residents in the universe. So within even austerity, there's a certain fire that is created. Sometimes the brahmacharis have been compared to fire. No, they've been compared to butter. Women to fire. That if brahmacharis and women associate intimately, not on a service basis, not with the proper formality that then the brahmacharis can melt and lose the determination to maintain their brahmacharity. So, like this, fire is used in many different ways as examples in Krishna consciousness, in an allegorical sense as well as in a practical sense. The sun is described as compared sometimes to the absolute truth, where the sunlight is described as the impersonal Brahman. The sun and the sunlight is the Paramatma realization, and the sunlight and the sun and the Vivishwan, the sun god, as the complete Bhagavan realization. In this way, there are three realizations of the absolute truth: Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti sabhyate. So, in this way, there are so many examples where by the fire in its different forms of the sun is used to give us a clear example. But here in this verse, it actually goes deep into what is fire, that we appreciate it by its light, by its heat, by its abilities. You can cook with fire, you can digest with fire, you can destroy cold with fire, you can evaporate. It makes one hungry, thirsty, and thus one can eat and drink. All these things are coming from fire. A fire also has a form, it has a type of effulgence. And interaction of fire later on in the verses produce many other things. So in this way, from one form we have air, then from air certain things come. With air, then fire also can be produced, and from fire then there's water, then there's finally earth. This way Krishna explains in the Gita that bhumir apo nalo bhayur kagmanor bhudeva cha ahankaram iti yang me bina prakriti ashtada. These are the eight separated energies, starting from earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and then coming to mind, intelligence, and false ego. But above this, apareyam itastvanyam prakriti vidhime param, there's the superior energy, that is the living force. I remember how Prabhupada, my previous ashram mother, sannyasis say the previous ashram, apurva ashram, referring to their other life, the previous birth. She came to see Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur, and Prabhupada was trying to explain to her, just a Western woman without much spiritual, Vedic, philosophical background, what was basic point of Krishna consciousness. So he was explaining to her that within the body there's this living force, there's a living energy, and that's permeated throughout the body as intelligence. And just by explaining it in this way, it's a living force. Somehow my previous ashram mother was able to understand everything very easily. So we have different ideas about soul. The body has a soul, but when we understand from the Vedic point that we are the living force, and because of the presence of living force, all the other things are manifesting. It's very easy to understand. So, because of the presence of the sun in the universe, then there's light all over the universe. Because of the presence of the living force in the heart, there's consciousness all over the body. So, Advaita Gosai, he knew that where there's Krishna, there's no nescience. Because Krishna is just like the sun. Surya Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hoyandakar Jaha Krishna Taha Maya Nahi Adhikar. That wherever Krishna is, Maya, nescience goes far away. So when he was in Navadvip Dham, he could see that the people were just so much engrossed in materialistic thoughts. But they're very expert in making everything appear very religious. Everything they did had a religious cover. That was the unique thing of the Vedic culture that had degenerated in Navadvip, is that everyone was very religious, but very materialistic. In other words, their religion was more or less a superficial show to substantiate their sense gratification. For instance, people were religious, but they're worshipping the demigods. Please, dhanam deya pratista deya sriyam deya pujam deya dhanam deya. Give me wealth, give me power, give me fame, give me, ma! This is the way they pray. They say, dhanam deya, give me wealth. Deya means give me. When you hear them from the Puranas, where it has the Markandeya Purana or the Chandipat, that the Maha, on Maha Loya Day, they play on every radio, every house, everywhere in Bengal, they play the different prayers. There's prayers of the demigods to the Devi, prayers of the human beings and prayers of the demon. The demons say, give me wine, give me meat, give me, that's what the demons pray. The human beings are praying, give me fame, give me power, give me a good wife, give me a good life, give me a good house, give me a good happiness. You know, then they go on like that. Then this is the demigods, they ask for other things. They ask for mystic power and for other forms of higher happiness, which human beings don't even think about. So you can ask the Devi for these different things. But this is like, so there are many demigod worshippers and they are doing their worship very religiously. But it was all for material benefit. Then there were those who were doing a different type of yoga for achieving liberation. Then there were people who were, they were just really into enjoying, but they wanted to also be part of the whole cultural situation. So they were into having festivals, so-called religious festivals, show off their wealth and their show off to everybody, I'm more religious than you are. So when they had married their daughters, they'd spend so much money, you know, deck her out with gold on the ear, from the ear to the nose, and then, you know, chest, and then here and there, everywhere, just completely, you know, real fancy cloth and gold ornaments, everything, and then big feast and feed all the people and bands and processions and then give their daughter away in marriage like this. So it was like, you know, actually you were just showing off, look at, I'm so wealthy and powerful and religious and I'm giving my daughter in marriage to this boy, Konya Dan. This is one of the Dasam Karmas, one of the 10 ritualistic Vedic sacrifices. So now I'm doing this so properly, and I'm such a religious person. And this way, but then what happened is, you know, people would run out of daughters. There's no one else to give in marriage, so what to do? There was a lot of fun having marriages, big feasts and everything. And there was those that had the money for it, they liked to show. So someone got the idea that I haven't had a marriage for a long time, let me marry Lord Shiva and Parvati, get two deities and have a big marriage ceremony for them, big feast, everything. So then that was the next Advaita Gosai. I said, what is going on? You know, just everything but Krishna consciousness. And then someone else thought, well, so they married Shiva and Parvati, let's do something new. And they married two dogs together. Female and male dog, married them together. Then someone else married two trees together. Neem, would they marry, what is it? They marry a neem tree with, no, it's a aswata tree with a banyan tree. They marry the two trees together. Then someone else, a female cat and a male cat, they marry them together, but deck them all out with their little hat and everything. And you know, in this way, but you know, anything, when you go to, then they had some pundits, they started, heard the devotees chanting. They said, no, chanting is not allowed. Chanting Hare Krishna, this is very impious. Because the holy name is so pure, you cannot chant it out loud. You see, you're too impure. If you chant it out loud, this will decrease the potency of the holy name. So nobody could chant. Only time they could chant was on the lunar eclipse when everybody was in the Ganges up to their neck. At that time, they thought the Ganges purified them, then they could chant Hare Krishna. That was the only time. But here, a few pandits, when they go into the Ganges, they say, Vasudeva, Vasudeva, Narayana, Krishna. Apart from that, only on the time of lunar or solar eclipse was there chanting. And that was inside the Ganges water. Then they chant Hare Bol, Hare Krishna. So, Advaita Goswami and a few group of Vaishnavas, they kept going to him and saying, you must do something. to stop this. In the name of religion, these people are becoming more and more and more materialistic, and they're not at all getting closer to serving Krishna. Whatever religion they're doing for some material purpose. This culture degenerated to such an extent. Everyone was very learned. But like, for instance, all the brahmanas, they were expert studying the Shastra from various angles, studying the grammar in Sanskrit, and then being able to challenge another person. Verse 17, chapter 13, it says this, I know more than you do. You know, and then they're just fighting with each other in this way. One, and then the other way said, no, and this Veda says this, and then they're, so that's when Lord Chaitanya came. You know, he said that Tarko Bahudo, you can never understand spiritual now by trying to defeat the other person and just fighting and arguing. But that's what it was. They were just, everyone was trying to show that I know more Sanskrit, I know more grammar, I know more more Shastra than you do. What was the conclusion of Shastra? What should we do? What was the actual way of fulfilling the Shastra advice? That people didn't understand. Simply, you know, just this verse against that verse, and knowing and memorizing, and just a very academic, superficial understanding of the Vedas. So there are literally thousands and thousands, millions of students running here, but they're all simply thinking how I can become more famous as a great scholar, more established as a great pundit, more followers who are going to come to me and accept that I am the greatest learned person. I'll become rich and famous. People will become my disciples and give me many donations. And this way I'll become a great Sanskrit scholar. I'll become even recognized maybe as the pundit of the king. And this way I'll have so much fame and glory. And everything was... what even their learning, even the brahmanas were polluted in this way. And they were just after some kind of brahminical pratishtha. Some fame and position and distinction in society. So the pure Vaishnavas, they were considered like the outcast of society. What's wrong with these people? I mean, they didn't fit in at all. Chanting Hare Krishna on their japa, going around and reading the Bhagavatam. I mean, they were like underground practically. I mean, the people thought, these people are really, they're against our whole society. They were not at all accepted, the Vaishnavas in Navadvipa. They were gradually, the people become so materialistic that they criticized the Vaishnavas and ridiculed them. And so why aren't you worshipping and getting more wealth and more power and more material facility? What are you doing just chanting these names of Hari, wasting your time like this? You should get into the Karmakanda, the real purpose of life. Building up more punya, more pious activity, and going to heaven. What are you doing? You're wasting your time here. So naturally, they didn't have at that time, somehow they just didn't have the strength to be able to counteract this ocean of materialistic religion. So they go to Advaita Goswami, and Advaita Goswami, he surveyed the whole situation, and he saw that it's just a hopeless. How are we going to establish pure religious principle? He decided the only way is Krishna himself has to come. Krishna must come here. So then, Advaita Goswami, Advaita Acharya, he started praying to the Lord that as a spiritual master in the Upanishads, you said, Acharya Mam Bhajaniyam, that a spiritual master, an Acharya, is none different from the Lord. He's his external manifestation. So in this way, as your devotee, if I'm have any oneness with you, if I have any connection with you, then I implore, I entreat you, must come down. I beg you, you must come down and now establish proper religious principle. Of course, Advaita Goswami is not only an ordinary acharya, he is Mahavishnu himself. So he's calling to Krishna, come down into the material world. There, he established a Shaligram Shila. He took Ganges water and he started to offer the Manjari flowers with two leaves in Ganges water to the Shaligram Shila, crying loudly to Krishna, worshipping with mantras and prayers and the holy name, crying out to Krishna and crying, fasting, offering worship to the Shaligram Shila. In this way, the message reached to Krishna and he agreed, all right, I'll come down. So in this way, by the loud prayers of Advaita Gosami, Lord Chaitanya descended into the material world. At the same time, actually, Haridas Thakur was also praying to Krishna to come down. So when Lord Chaitanya came, at that time, was the lunar eclipse, as everyone knows, Gaur Purnima, 1486, 501 years ago, was the lunar eclipse. So that was the one day where everybody chants Hare Krishna. It's not just like, oh, everyone goes every day and chants, and that day they also chant. No, nobody would chant then, because of this very kind of distorted type of philosophy that had gone around by the various, some caste brahmanas. In the Vedas it says that in the Kali Yuga, many of the demons who were not killed by Krishna, were given a benediction. They could take birth in the family of brahmanas in Kali Yuga. Not that every brahmana is a demon, but there are many demons who, all those demons took birth as brahmanas. So some of these demoniac type brahmanas, they were actually preaching against Krishna consciousness, against Vedic principle, missing the real opportunity of taking birth as a brahmana in India. They could have achieved all perfection. Instead, they still continued in their offensive mentality. So Lord Chaitanya came down to deliver all of these materialistic brahmanas, appearing as a brahmana, becoming the best of all the pandits. Then he became the greatest of all the devotees in his pastimes. So when Lord Chaitanya became inspired by pure Krishna consciousness, officially, I mean, he started to manifest his real pastime of Harinam Sankirtan. And he was a teenager. At that time, he was already a great master, and he had hundreds and hundreds of the best students in Navadvipa. And they were all, you know, learning like this. Now we have Nimai Pandits, our master. We're going to become the most famous, the best Sanskrit scholars will be able, just like he's able to defeat even Keshav Kashmiri, everyone will be able to become the greatest pundits, like Nimai Pandit, the greatest master, will be able to defeat everyone, will be so expert. And Nimai Pandit, he was expert like that. He would just challenge anyone. Come here. Please come, my dear sir. Kindly tell me something about, the Surya. Surya Narayan. Anything, you just ask a person. Then the person would say, you know, he'd say, well, you know, everyone being pandit or proud, so he'd say something. I know, so Surya Narayan, say some mantra. And then he'd say, well, Lord Chaitanya asked him a question on that. He tried to establish some point. Lord Chaitanya would smash him, defeat him, say that your point's totally nonsense, and the person admit defeat. Then he'd say, no, but actually it is right if you look from this point of view. Then he would establish him, say, yes, I was right. Then he would defeat him again, then establish and defeat. Like, just showing that by logic and by a vast learning, Lord Chaitanya could practically establish anything on that type of basis. So he was just admired. At that time, wasn't Lord Chaitanya. He was known as Nimai Pandit. So all his students, they just admired this ability of Lord Chaitanya to be such a great Brahmin pandit. And here Lord Chaitanya came back from Goya. And there he was changed. He was a devotee. He was chanting. He was talking about Krishna. When he was giving the classes, everything he said, whether the alphabet, it would always be bringing back to Krishna. And they thought, what's gone wrong with Nimai Pandit? What happened to him? That fire of learning seems to have been put out by this devotion. So then they went to his teacher, Gangadas Pandit, and they ask him that, Gangadas Pandit, can you see what happened in Nimai? He seems to have given up the Brahminical nature of arguing and challenging others and being proud, and he's become like humble and devotional, and he's chanting and he's always talking about Krishna, and he's not the same person. I mean, he's practically left the Brahminical culture as they knew it. So Gangadas Pandit, he went to see Lord Chaitanya and said, listen, the duty of the brahmanas is to teach, to establish the truth. If we don't know the logic and argument, how can we prove what is the truth? How can we establish, how will the brahminical nature be kept? What is this I hear that you're giving up your natural occupation is a brahmana. Mahipanda said, who said? I challenge anyone. I can let anyone come, make any point, I'll defeat it, then I'll again defeat the very point that I established, and again I'll defeat the, I'll show what I'm the same to my pundit. What do you mean? And then he went out there, oh, great, you know, he's the same to my pundit, everything's all right. He's as belligerent as ever. So then he went out to the road, he challenged, who is there? Meanwhile, one uncle of Srivas Thakur came by, he was just walking by the street. And he happened to be just meditating on Krishna, and he was just singing a song about, he saw Lord Chaitanya, he was even more inspired. Oh, Lord Chaitanya, and he started singing this song louder. A song about how Krishna was so merciful that he sucked, he was offered the poison by Putana by putting poison on her breast. And he sucked her breast. Not only did he give her liberation, but he was so merciful, he elevated Putana to become his mother in the spiritual world. Even though she was coming to him with poison, but because she offered her breast as a mother, even it was covered with poison, Krishna accepted that within that offering there was something good. She was coming as a mother, even though it was a poison mother. But he only took the good part, and he liberated her and gave her a position as mother in the spiritual world. So like this is a whole song glorifying the mercy of Krishna, how he delivered this witch. So therefore we can also get the mercy of Krishna. We are approaching him very humbly as a servant, praying that he'll also deliver us, coming to him in that serving attitude. So when the Mai Pandit heard this chant, all of a sudden Krishna became fixed in his heart, and he just became just completely absorbed in samadhi and pure ecstasy of love for Krishna. And he just started to cry, and he just started, Krishna, Krishna, I'm so fallen. I've neglected you for so many years. You're so merciful, even you deliver Putana. And like this, he just became just filled with separation for Krishna, pulling his hair and fall on the ground, and he was just rolling. And all of the students watched, and oh no. Nimai Pandit will never be the same again. What's happened to our master? So then Nimai, after he came back to some calmness, he took all his students, he called them by the Ganges side, they're all sitting there with their books and their writing implements, and he had a heart-to-heart talk with them. He said that, I have to tell you all very sincerely, I take an initiation from Ishwarapuri. Now I've got the great inspiration for serving Krishna in my heart. I realize that Krishna is the summum bonum. After studying all the Vedas, everything you know, I always tried to give you the best that I could give. I've given you the best in Sanskrit, the best in culture, best in everything I've taught you. But now I've come to the realization there's nothing higher than Krishna. And I'm overwhelmed with this experience. I have to admit to you, I won't be able to concentrate anymore on the pedantics of Sanskrit teachings. I simply want to talk about Krishna and to teach people, because this is the highest thing that I could give anyone. So I have to excuse myself and apologize that I won't be able to fulfill possibly the desire that you wanted in simply giving you this type of brahminical superficial knowledge. So you're all free to go and take some other master. I release you from whatever obligation you had as my student, as my Sanskrit disciples. You can go and take some other master, because now I'm going to be teaching about Krishna consciousness, about the absolute truth. I'm not going to be able to get into this other type of academics. So then there was a big silence amongst all the students. The best student, the most sharpest Brahmin sons in the whole Navadvip. There's a silence. Then one stood up and said, Nimai Pandit, you've always given us the best teaching, and we have grown to respect and love you for everything you've done for us. So now, that you've come to this conclusion that there's nothing more beyond Krishna. So we don't want to leave you. You then, why don't you teach us this? Why haven't you taught us this before? You tell us about Harinam Sankirtan, but you've never taught us to do Harinam Sankirtan before. So if you want us, if that's what you're going to do, then why don't you teach us? We'll also join you. And we'll continue to follow you as our master. So then everyone surrendered to Lord Chaitanya. Immediately had the best of all the students. Best of all the brahmanas also, the really hard people to get. You know how hard it is to get the very, you know, qualified students. They're very proud of their little bit of learning. But somehow Krishna Chaitanya arranged to have all of them as his students, and then they all became devotees at one time. So he called Shivas and the other devotees, and they taught them how to do Harinam Sankirtan right on the spot. And there they were all chanting together. Then the other brahmanas are walking by and saying, what is this? Nimai Pandana students, Hare Krishna, Hare, chanting. They couldn't believe it. You know? So this way, Lord Chaitanya began his Harinam Sankirtan, and he's trained all these students and all the devotees in the Harinam Sankirtan. And this way, the fire of the Sankirtan movement was ignited, and that, of course, was brought by Srila Prabhupada all over the world. And now he wanted all of his followers to continue to ignite so many fires everywhere until the whole world is actually... But this fire is described as the fire, kind of like the light of the moon, like millions of moons, Sisutala, very cooling and soothing for the living entity. It's not a burning fire, it's a soothing, cooling light, like the moonlight, very soothing and calming to the heart. So, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki, Pancha Tattva ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. So we can pray to the Pancha Tattva by their mercy. We can have by the fire of their mercy, we can have the various material desires and obstacles in the heart be burned away, leaving us with the a pure consciousness that was originally there when we were with Krishna, when we were in the spiritual world, before we came into material contamination. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Yes? Of course, there were millions of students in Avadvi. Place was student loka. It was the place where every Brahmins, I mean, it was like the whole town was Brahmanas and people running here and there and going to different classes. And it was like one huge university, practically. Everyone was either a student or a teacher or somehow just fulfilling the infrastructure. The whole town of Navadvip city was basically based on this type of academic, brahminical pursuit. It was a very unique place. People from all over the subcontinent of India would come there for this type of learning process. So who were the exact students that, I mean, apart from those direct students that were Nimai Pandit's disciples and who became integrated in the Sankirtan movement, some of them fully has surrendered, or maybe all of them. But there are many other students that were naturally affected by this. And when Lord Chaitanya went to the Chankazi, already his movement was so expanded that hundreds of thousands of people went with him to protest against the stopping of the Harinam Sankirtan. So like that, of those hundreds of thousands of people, so many were students who may have participated in the mass movement and so on. But that doesn't mean that all of them were equally realized in actually the process. Actually, their complaint to Lord Chaitanya was, why aren't you chanting Hare Krishna? Why are you chanting the names of the gopis? What happens is that when someone is a Kanista Adhikari, they become very fixed in the ritualistic practice of devotional service. And they naturally get some energy from that. But then if there's someone that's more advanced and that they're performing some other type of devotional service on the Raganuga platform, they'll immediately criticize and say that this person is in complete maya, he's puffed up, he doesn't know what he's doing. It's natural, maybe someone is like that, imitating sometimes Raganuga, and it's justified that he's criticized. They didn't realize that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, and that he wasn't an imitator trying to just put himself on some Raganuga platform. He was really on the Raganuga platform. And therefore, he was quite justified in meditating on the names of the gopis if he wanted to, and experiencing that Krishna conscious ecstasy. But they were approaching him that, well, he's just another Vaishnava like everyone else. He's just like another, I mean, he's a little bit better than we are, but he's not. Obviously, these were not people that were in the Mahaprakash. They weren't in the inner circle of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Otherwise, they would have already known who Lord Chaitanya was. These were some of the hundreds of thousands and millions of devotees that were there that were chanting Hare Krishna and accepted the basic process of chanting Hare Krishna and Sankirtan. But they were a little bit out of the inner circle. They didn't really understand who Lord Chaitanya was. So they thought that, well, like any devotee, he should be chanting Hare Krishna. And why isn't he chanting Hare Krishna? So they just told him that you should chant Hare Krishna, don't chant these names. But Lord Chaitanya at that time was in an ecstasy when suddenly he was like in a deep meditation. Actually, possibly he was even having darshan of the gopis or Krishna or some ready type of profound experience. I don't know if it exactly explains, but he was having some very deep experience at the time. He was totally oblivious to the outside world. All of a sudden, these people were talking to him, like kind of like Muchukunda when he came out of his sleep. He was just so angry. But Lord Chaitanya, when he was suddenly broken from his ecstasy, he just became so impatient. What's going on here? And he realized that these people are so impudent. He just chased them away. And then after that, they started criticizing, why is he chasing us away? What did we do? We just told him to chant Hare Krishna. We didn't do anything wrong. You know, that type of thing. So, in this way, Lord Chaitanya realized that as long as I'm a Grihastha devotee, they're just going to consider me to be on the same level. If I want to do a little bit of any, if I'm to fulfill my mission, I have different internal and external purposes. So one of them is to experience certain higher ecstasies of Krishna prema. So then no one's going to be able to understand that, and they're going to criticize. So if I'm a sannyasi, at least they'll keep a respectful distance away. In those days, they would keep a respectful distance away. That the system was that no grihastha or non-sannyasi would ever criticize or try to analyze the devotional practices of a sannyasi, that they were considered to be at another level. Among sannyasis, they would discuss about their, or they would analyze, but amongst at least the grihasthas and the brahmacharis, they would never consider themselves qualified to start judging a sannyasi. The sannyasis may judge the sannyasis, but that's another thing. But the others wouldn't. So in this way, at least Lord Chaitanya would generally be respected by the vast majority of the population. Of course, he was criticized even then by the sannyasis, but that's by Prakashananda and others. That's another thing. Sannyasis have a right to go into other sannyasis' affairs, but the general public, they would naturally offer respect to him, and this way he would save them from making any offenses. That was it. And he could then go on with his other purposes of preaching as well as realizing the higher mellows of Krishna prema without being criticized by neophyte students and so on. Is that alright? Yes? Well, there's not so little. Of course, because Lord Chaitanya has come down, Krishna has come down in the mood of Radharani, and Gadadhar is Radharani, so she takes a kind of, he's taking a more of a supportive role. Actually, Lord Chaitanya is taking the main role. There's only room for one Radharani in the, so Gadadhar is coming mainly in a supportive role. But there is quite a few things in the Chaitanya Bhagavad as well as in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a few things, like when Lord Chaitanya was going to Vrindavan and then Gadadhar went with him. And there's a whole pastime how Gadadhar was going to break his vow to leave Kshetra. He was a Kshetra sannyasi to stay in the Dham. But he was going to break that vow to go with Lord Chaitanya. But then Lord Chaitanya, the whole interlude there, he stopped him from going. Gadadhar fainted, and then Lord Chaitanya just left. So they're like this. There's quite a few interludes like that. And then in the Bhakti Ratnakar, it mentions how Srinivasacharya approached Gadadhar Prabhu in the ecstasy, the deep separation he was in after Lord Chaitanya left. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, it mentions quite a bit about how a Gadadhar Prabhu would attend the kirtans of Lord Chaitanya, and how he was very supportive, and then how Gadadhar met Pundarik Vidyanidhi, how he took initiation from Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and Lord Chaitanya personally conducted that. Pundarik Vidyanidhi is Vishabhanu Raja, the father of Radharani in Krishna Leela, became the guru of Gadadhar in Chaitanya Leela. Then it mentions how sometimes, whenever Gadadhar would make green tamarind chutney, we don't get green tamarind, you can't get in the West, we get the ripe tamarind, it's already like preserved. So that's considered, you know, if you take too much of it, it's considered a little bit passionate or tamasic or something. But when it's green, it's right off the tree, the tamarind, when it's just still green, like a green apple and a ripe apple, then it's a bit, it's a more sattvic, and it's very, but it's very sour. But it has a very kind of aromatic, sour taste. So somehow Gadadhar Pandit would make a type of chutney and offer that to Krishna. And that chutney was such a combination of sweet, sour, various type of mellows that anyone who took it would suddenly feel separation for Krishna. So whenever Gadadhar would make it, somehow Lord Chaitanya immediately would be there. I mean, it didn't matter where he was, he could be in Jagannath Puri if he made that chutney, you know, somehow mystically he would be there, you know. He wouldn't have said, whenever you make this, I'll be there. He said there were five things that when Nityananda would dance, Lord Chaitanya would be there. It didn't matter where he was. If Nityananda was dancing in kirtan, Lord Chaitanya would be there. If Gadadhar made his tamarind chutney, then Lord Chaitanya would be there. Like that, there were a few others. And then he was always there in the house of Raghava Pandit. So, I forget the other two. Then, there's quite a bit, but Prabhupada explained, because he is in a kind of assisting Lord Chaitanya, therefore Lord Chaitanya has taken a more prominence in this pastime. Yes? Pardon? What's your name? Huh? Yep. So, the Bhakti Yak. That's it? Yak. So, the individuality is there always. because we're individual. So we never lose our individuality. Just like if you put one drop of water in the ocean, it doesn't mean that the drop becomes the ocean. It still remains a drop in the sense of quantity. But to take a crude example, because maybe a drop disperses, but in the sense of quantity, it doesn't become the whole ocean. So if you put a molecule of H2O in the ocean, it doesn't become the whole ocean, even though it mixes up with the rest of the ocean water. So like that, when the individual soul goes into the Brahmajyoti, which has got so many individual souls together, that's like an ocean of light, of effulgence, they're all just emitting effulgence. At that time, the individual soul remains individual, but loses the ability to distinguish itself from the other souls. It gets lost in the crowd kind of situation, where it just identifies that I'm the whole, I'm this, whatever, I'm this, I'm the, this is what I am. Soham, I am it. So, because of that, their devotional service at that point ceases. And although they're individual, they don't really lose their individuality, but they lose the ability, the cognizance, or the ability to see their individuality. That's why it's considered like a spiritual suicide. It's not a complete suicide, because eventually they can fall down from there, come back in the material world. From the material world, they can be liberated and go back to the spiritual world in one of the planets of Vishnu. But it said that you stop your devotional service when you're in that state. Pardon? Oh, what a sad story. You talk about how they come. A dad? And how does the sun set? Where does the sun go when it sets? Sometimes people say that the Aborigines would say in the island, in the Hawaii, they thought that every night the ocean was dying in the ocean and it was being born in the morning from the other side. So like that, Krishna appears and he disappears. Actually, that's just a way of winding up his pastime and going off to some other place. As such, but for the materialist, that want to believe there's no God, or that, well, Krishna wasn't really God, he leaves in some mysterious way that they can't really figure out. Did he die or is he alive? But he doesn't completely destroy their bubble. He makes it, maybe it seems like he died. Like, for instance, that Krishna, he was shot in the ankle, or in the ankle or the foot. Maybe that's where the Achilles heel came from. He was shot in the foot by a hunter. And then there's a story that this hunter was actually reincarnation of Bali. That Bali was killed by Ramchandra from a hidden place. Bali, the older, was the brother or something of Sugriva in the Ram Lila. So then he said, all right, you can shoot me in my next, and you can kill me in my next life. Something like that. You can shoot me and I'll... So then they say this hunter was actually Bali and he was getting revenge, so he shot Krishna in the foot. And it looked like Krishna was deceased or something for a second. And never looked, Krishna was gone. There's no body, there's no... So, but the demon said, see Krishna, he was killed. Or they have some other theories like that. Krishna, of course, never dies and there was no body found. But there was some pastime like that he was called Moshamalila, shot in the foot. But the devotees, they can't even we can discuss it because we're on a very low level of devotion, but I mean, like the gopis or anyone, if they were to think of Krishna being shot in the foot or something, it was just too much. I mean, they would, they couldn't discuss it. And the devotees in general don't like to discuss Krishna when he's leaving, because the heart that Krishna, the feeling that Krishna is not here is too much. That's why we chant Hare Krishna, so that we can always have Krishna's presence. So we don't really feel that Krishna is not here, because he's present in his holy name. As far as Lord Chaitanya's disappearance, he simultaneously was seen disappearing in three different places. Excuse me. It's about 33 degrees centigrade in India, so it's a big change. Plus 6, plus 5 or so. In the middle of the day. He was seen entering into the Jagannath temple, closed the door, went right into the Jagannath deity, didn't come out. He was seen going into the temple of Tota Gopinath, closed the door, and they say that they show a mark in Tota Gopinath's leg. He said he entered into Tota Gopinath at his knee. And some devotees say they saw him chanting Hare Krishna and just go into the ocean and never come back. So there's three stories. Since Lord Chaitanya can take unlimited forms, probably all three are correct. But he said he is still present when his holy name is chanted by the devotees. He's present in the Sankirtan movement. So even when we chant Lord Chaitanya's name now, we can still feel his presence. Isn't he? He's also come before you all, very fortunate to worship him in his Panchatattva form. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Out of their causeless mercy, they come here to give the people of Sweden, the devotees here in Amvix, their mercy. So it's late. I think if there's other questions that people have, maybe services that people have to do, and if there's other questions, I'll be here till lunchtime. Then after breakfast, if someone wants to ask some questions to me, they could probably speak to their authority and come over and see me. Otherwise, I think it'd be too long now. Hare Krishna.